You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. We are at the very beginning of June 1st, 2023, and this is not Sven Longshanks, most unfortunately, but it's Matthew Raphael Johnson instead. We need to keep Sven, of course, in our prayers, and more than that, to do what we can to send him money, but I think letters of encouragement to let him know that he's not alone are very important. Today, I want to talk about Ukraine. Yesterday, I did a lecture on the Cossacks at a very specific period of time, and my book, Ukrainian Nationalism, came out a few years ago. Talked about a lot of the stuff that's developed militarily and politically since then. At the end of the book, I went to great lengths to talk about New Russia or the Donbass, two states, and given everything that's been happening, the U.S. supplying this very eccentric Ukrainian armed force, despite the country having no money, all the diversion of resources to things like a biological warfare program, you know, a navy of any size, and the casualties have been absolutely disastrous. I did come across, this is from May 26th, from Sputnik, but I know it's been published in some other places, new developments in precisely that biological and chemical warfare sector. Of course, the regime went wild when this first came out. Later on, of course, fully admitted it, but that never quite got into the press. And the Russian point man on this is General Igor Kirillov. And technically, his title is the head of the radiation, chemical, and biological defense troops in the Russian military. And there's been a lot of documents that have been turned over, some new things that have been found, including an increasing incidence of the bird flu. Well, let me quote Kirillov specifically here. He said, the U.S. Defense Ministry is actively studying these economically significant infections outside of the national territory in biolaboratories located along the borders of its geopolitical opponents. Once again, this confirms the U.S. is developing biological weapons components outside of its own national jurisdiction, including Ukraine. Documents seized from a veterinary laboratory confirm the involvement of the Kharkov Institute in the work within the framework of the American projects, YUPI-8, PI-444, in preparation for the implementation of something called the Flu Fly Away Project. And he says, we are especially concerned about an increase in the incidence of bird flu in Russian and other European countries, where, according to the International Epizootics Bureau, the disease has acquired a year-round character, and the economic losses from it since 2021 have been €3 billion. The Ukrainians, they tried to destroy the materials left in the Exania Nova Biosphere Reserve biolaboratory, but they failed to do it. What they were able to recover, the Russian military scientists discovered a semi-artificial, highly pathogenic bird flu. And the Walter Reed Army Institute of Research supervised much of this. There was an active collection, he says, of biomaterials from the population, specifically of Ukraine. The documents that were the Defense Ministry had seized, again, there was an attempt to destroy them, but Walter Reed was a big part of this. The antibiotic resistance from microorganisms isolated solely within the Ukrainian military during the hostilities in the Donbas starting in 2014. So there is absolutely no question that this is ongoing. The harvest fails. There's no functional industry. The country is going to take decades to recover, if it ever will. And this is what the U.S. wants to put its money towards. Anyone who doubted the evil of the U.S. government is certainly convinced now. The point of using just materials from the Donetsk area suggests, of course, that this is exactly where they want to study the resistance of people with that specific genetic mark. So there's no doubt about what's going on. This is why media control is so important to them, and why publications like Sputnik are banned pretty much everywhere, at least in Europe. I'm not sure about Canada, but only in the U.S. really can you read it. But as many of you realize, things have changed. Now, everybody underestimated to the extent that the West was willing to bankrupt itself in order to fight Russia. It's not a support of Ukraine so much. The Orthodox Slavs have always been an enemy to the regime, from Ivan the Terrible to now, certainly reaching its high point in during the Crimean War. The one place you didn't see it was during the Cold War, where the regime was interested only in peace and respect between the two empires. That empire is gone, and now it's all-out war, especially under conditions of extreme financial panic in the U.S., and even worse elsewhere. One of the few places that's doing relatively well is Russia, China, and Crimea, despite all of the propaganda from the financial press about it. There's another article after Bakhmut by Douglas McGregor, which actually came out a couple days ago. And McGregor has been really good in this kind of thing. He's not a historian, but he does specialize in military matters, day-to-day, uniform military matters. And it gets extremely depressing when we talked about casualty figures, how bad they are, how everyone's lying about it except for a handful of us. And seeing that confirmed is extremely painful for those who really care about this part of the world. Drago Bosnić, a couple days ago on InfoBricks, speaking of the disaster in Ukraine, and you can't imagine that officers, even though the higher brass, a couple of them were trained in the U.S., specifically in Texas, after a while they're going to reject their role, which is absolutely an impossible role. The regime is imposing just impossible sacrifices and tasks on these people, where you have people like Bosnić and others saying this is a war about propaganda, not about actual battlefield results. These aren't attainable goals. And we know what Zelensky is. He has always been just a front man, someone that could be installed and who is kind of dumb enough that he'll do whatever he's told. Not to be drafted, and I've seen some of the videos of these Ukrainian boys being, and even middle-aged men, being dragged out of their homes. So as to suffer and die for Western oligarchs. The American press, of course, is a huge part of the lie. They have no conception of what strategy is, of what the word offensive is. How to estimate, the implications of each and every operation. And you can't trust anything they have to say. And Zelensky is not only has, zero popularity in Ukraine as a whole, but just as bad in the military. Bosnich makes the claim that there's already an outline of strong military opposition to this absolutely ridiculous war. And it's, there's really no faction of the military that likes him. So many of them, came of age, a couple of these major people, Shaptala, Zabrodsky, Sersky, who is head of the ground forces. I think Zabrodsky was actually educated in Texas. Most of these guys are younger than me. So a lot of them really only know the Soviet, the NATO military education, not the Soviet one. And in many cases, it's just closeness to Zelensky, not military acumen that gets some of these guys promoted. Now, the top commander, we talked about him before, Zaluzhny, who has apparently disappeared. He has unquestioned authority in the military, and Zelensky pretending that he knows the first thing about military operations, and some of that presumptuous and pretentious, he starts believing the Western press about him, and he took the military in this operation and turned it into a self-glorifying theater project. Again, propaganda more than anything else. So the Bakhmut victory, with Russia, committing minimal forces with a strategy to minimize its own casualties as well as that of the local population, who are all Russian and are pro-Russian, as I talked about yesterday. Here's where the absurdity of the Zelensky, just a colonial administrator. He doesn't really make his own decisions. But I mean, the American brass don't have, they're in no better position to judge anybody. But, Zaluzhny wanted to withdraw from Bakhmut, and Zelensky said no, entirely because of the propaganda aspect of it. He's terrified that the West is going to give up on him, because he has nothing else to offer other than, as I've been writing recently, the land was really the only thing left that had any value in the country. And once that value falls, the final last thing of value is Ukrainian lives. And this was the home of New Khazaria. So there's nothing but contempt for Orthodox Slavic men. But in demanding that city be held, and of course now it's fallen, he now has everybody in the military turning on him. We all know that the regime is lying about casualty figures. And probably as of a couple days ago, 300,000 either killed or severely wounded is a solid estimate. The Turkish press, citing Israeli intelligence, and they should know, in terms of irreplaceable losses of 400,000, 160,000 confirmed kills, and the rest either severely wounded or dying later on. And even high-ranking Ukrainian officials, the ambassador to Britain, Pristaiko, confirmed all of this. Zaluzhny himself, he in his conversations with Mark Milley and von der Leyen, and on top of all this has all been confirmed. And as this particular author mentions, Zelensky has been hoarding a massive amount of wealth outside of Ukraine. Pandora Papers confirm that. And of course, he has a very lavish lifestyle at a time where there is no Ukrainian economy anymore. And most of his very close associates, whether it be in the Rada or elsewhere, the Defense Council, are living that same kind of jet-setting life. And it's hard to believe that Zelensky is unaware of this. Being trained by NATO, these younger officers have been thrown into what everyone's calling a meat grinder with very good reason, which is now over. And the city, which is a city that's like 80,000 people, did have it anyway. Another being thrown against a major superpower whose military record is far superior to that of the U.S. Zelensky, I think, and again, if this has changed, it's very recent. He hasn't been seen in public since April 13th. That Zelensky probably has been arrested and isolated. You have some in Ukraine saying that he's been killed, but this is just the beginning of the complete rejection of that man's administration. And I truly believe, given he's not really a political guy, he was an entertainer who was placed in a position of power. The elections are laughable. The U.S. is going to install who they want to install, who they need to install. The man has about as much legitimacy as Joe Biden does. Or at least Biden was a senator at one point. He probably doesn't remember that. So the war has never gone in Ukraine's way. I've talked about this at great length. Any retreat from the Russian force is strategic. Because priority number one is to control their own casualties while inflicting as much as possible on the Ukrainians, which it does only reluctantly. And that Ukrainian forces or the mercenaries usually operate in the cities, 100% Russian-speaking cities, knowing full well that the Russian forces aren't going to attack them there. That's a very different story. That's not even a conventional warfare style. General Sorovikin, who put in command last year, the initial idea was to limit the size and scope of the operation so as to force to liberate the eastern Russian-speaking regions, who have always wanted to be a part of Russia, to protect them from what the regime was going to do to them, and force Ukraine to the negotiating table. What no one mentioned, or what no one thought would happen, is that Washington would be fully content with what's going to end up being a 500,000 Ukrainians killed in a few months. And Sorovikin was put in charge, he reformed the operation, realizing now that there's nothing that the West won't do. They're going to fight to the last Ukrainian. Putin, being an intelligent man, gave him full freedom. This is not the case in Ukraine, or the U.S. for that matter. Full freedom to reform the system. The standoff, attack, and strike systems, almost semi-guerrilla action, while increasing the number of infantry. I was laughing at the articles talking about the shortage of Russian tanks. Russia had about 10 times the number of tanks of any other country in the world. For whatever reason, Russia has created a huge number of tanks. There is no way they could ever, the lie that the regime was pushing, that they had to go buy military equipment from China, which, by the way, is Russian to begin with in many cases, as if you can just mix and match military equipment. And even people like Douglas MacGregor say that this entire Bakhmut obsession with Zelensky may well be his undoing. So this strategic success in that relatively small town, this is sort of like when General Lee was defeated at Gettysburg. The attitude about the war changed. The attitude of France and Britain changed relative to who they're going to recognize. And today, of course, Washington, who's the only factor that matters here, that, you know, the chances of a Ukrainian victory, a little offensive, let alone victory, are pretty much zero. And there is nobody in Zelensky's administration, especially in the brass, that believe in any possibility of victory. The most they could hope for is some kind of negotiated settlement, which, you know, demilitarizes much of Ukraine and maybe allows the regime to save face. But if there was ever a free election there, none of that apparatus would exist. But that's why it's not going to happen. Apparently, there are about 30,000 Ukrainian soldiers and mercenaries training in Europe. That's going to be the so-called core of the counterattack force. But nothing, you know, this is simply, it's not going to change very much. Gerasimov now commands the Russian forces in Ukraine. And really, I mean, this is still part of Russia. They don't really speak Ukrainian there. They're well aware of this possibility. The shortage of ammunition, the shortage of fuel makes it impossible. But the highest tech surveillance equipment means nothing's going to be able to be organized without an immediate response. And so much of their resources have been completely exhausted. And once that becomes manifest, and maybe it already has, it's the Russians who are going to be going on the offense. You know, Russian retreats have been a temporary expedient in not just preserving their own lives, but that of these Russian speakers in eastern Ukraine. Russian casualties have been absolutely almost nothing compared to Ukrainian ones. The whole point of these meat grinders is for Zelensky to maintain some kind of standing. This is a, I'm not willing to say that this is like a Gettysburg defeat, but with the ridiculous number of casualties that they threw, even if they had held it, it would have been a Pyrrhic victory. But of course they didn't. And I think one of the key factors is the attitude of the Ukrainian brass relative to this man, who is not a military man, who's not even a political man. He does what he's told. I've spoken at length about the defections being the number one problem. You know, the Western media is so stupid. They simply don't realize that these are all Russian-speaking areas who are 100% pro-Russian. There is no incentive for them to do anything but have as a number one priority the minimization of those casualties. Kiev knows that. The U.S. knows that. And therefore, they utilize urban areas, knowing full well what Russia's policy is going to be. Much of the Bakhmut population fled. Russia organized quite a while ago the withdrawal of many of these people back to Russia and have the fast track for Russian citizenship. Or now, of course, these are recognized independent states. The same thing goes there. That they are, you know, the autonomous region. They voted to enter into Russian space politically. Given that, it's not even so much the Russian demand of demilitarization. It's the fact that Ukraine can't afford anything else. I have a lengthy paper coming out summarizing everything that's happened what is it, 18 months, whatever it is now. And the key issue is economics. There was no money there under the best of times. And yet the diversion of needed funds, I desperately needed funds, into building up a navy, into, you know, there's so many resources being expended that Ukraine desperately needs. You know, the currency has no value. So much of the whatever industry was in the West has long since been dismantled. And a few things have been nationalized, but as I've mentioned before, that's just a matter of the owner will get that back with no debt attached to it. There's nothing that these people won't do that isn't a scam. And I have to stress this. The oligarchs in Ukraine are almost exclusively Jewish. The longtime hatred of the Jews against Ukrainians, that's not forgotten. If you listen to my show yesterday, I go into great length about why the Jews were hated there in the 17th century and how the Cossacks visited revenge on them, on the Kahal system. The Kahal was as armed as anybody else, but certainly not a military force. And now, of course, you have, in desperation, the Western concern with chemical weapons. They, you know, even Israel was skirting the border of that with the, they used it with the, you know, depleted uranium, but also the white phosphorus, which is on the border of, you know, straight out chemical warfare or something that's tolerated. I know basic international law from Geneva rejects the use of white phosphorus, iffy on yellow phosphorus, which was used by the U.S. on Iwo Jima in World War II. But when the press doesn't deal with the issue, it doesn't exist. It appears that the U.S., if something isn't done, if there isn't some kind of a settlement, if the military doesn't end up overthrowing Zelensky, which I think is highly unlikely, because nothing happens without an American, unless there's a cabal of some kind, and he is overthrown, there'll be a massive media blackout on the question. And given that Ukraine now is a fourth world country, doesn't have to be, and their best men are either killed or fled the country, this is going to place some money. And Orthodox people don't want to hurt each other. And banning the church almost en masse, I guess the Kiev Patriarchate, wherever it's called now, is probably the last man standing, which is essentially a uniate body, makes him just increasingly unpopular to the point of almost absurdity. No commander, unless he's a psychotic, wants to see this many men die for nothing. I mean, let's say we live in fantasy world. Let's pretend we're an American journalist and we believe whatever we're told to believe. What's the best case scenario here? Let's say that Russia says, you know what, this isn't worth it. And they give Eastern Ukraine back. Well, Eastern Ukraine has already defeated the Ukrainian army back in 2014. They are armed. They are very combat experienced. They're extremely, they're Russian nationalists, and many of them are royalists. You know, all of their, some of their official documents have the icon of Tsar Nicholas. Somehow they connect that with the Soviet Union. But if that's simply a military matter, then I guess you could, you know, there's a huge mainstream Stalin wasn't so bad movement in much of Russia in the East, which I have talked about at length too. They would simply have a Northern Ireland situation. It would be nonstop guerrilla warfare over there. There's one thing that we know is that Ukraine can't afford any of this. What the U.S., again, the only factor that matters, the U.S. is demanding these commanders do with Russian 100% air superiority. Most of these drone attacks have been shot down by Russian missile defense. The destruction of fuel depots, the destruction of ammunition depots, a lot of low-level gifts to Ukraine. This have to be paid back eventually, that are obsolete. This mixing and matching of military equipment is just at a point of absurdity. They're being rushed in training and in places like Germany and elsewhere as their economies are getting deindustrialized. France offered to train pilots, but there's no functional way. The infrastructure for an air war isn't there. All of Ukraine is under very close surveillance, and that's gotten even better for Russia as this 18 months have gone on. There's very little that they can do that the Russian forces wouldn't be prepared for. Everything else is simply journalistic twaddle. But when you have even the Pentagon, who's been commanding the Ukrainian forces, saying that, you know what, victory probably isn't going to happen, the resources aren't there, and that assumes that the Ukrainian brass doesn't revolt in one way or another, or if they, you know, purge them, the U.S. purges them. I have no idea if they have political commissars there. However they maintain discipline at a time where no one wants to fight for Kiev, especially when you're talking about Russian-speaking regions who have manifested for several decades that they want to be a part of Russia. I think all of us underestimated the ridiculous sacrifices that the U.S. and the West would make to fight Russia, something that never happened during the Cold War. The total propaganda, there's no other options available for people to study except the pro-U.S., pro-Ukrainian position there. Blackout of all political parties and non-state newspapers, etc. in Ukraine. I refuse to believe that a highly educated population hasn't figured that out. The violent methods of, you know, being drafted. And of course, the fourth world status, which has to be humiliating for any legitimate Ukrainian patriot over there. All because of the Western obsession with Russia as the antipode to liberalism. It's religious and ideological at its core. Unfortunately, this Jewish oligarchy in charge, actually making military decisions, is causing the lives of, ending the lives of hundreds of thousands of Orthodox Ukrainians, which certainly is not something that bothers them. And quite literally, that's the nature of the beast. Thank you, everyone. I will talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.